assignment, right? She wanted to know where they went, when they went where's, without her. That's almost a quote, by the way. She talks like that, Hikara. Anyway, I was supposed to follow them, but I also eavesdropped a bit. I probably shouldn't admit this, but I'm a chronic eavesdropper. I really can't help myself. I swear by the storm, I don't know what you're talking about. Okay, yeah, I get that. I mean, I saw you materialize all covered in sand back there, so I probably should have guessed. But your mind always goes with the simplest explanation first, you know? I figured you knew how to teleport from place to place. Do you know how to teleport from place to place? No. Exactly. So what you can do, if I've got this right, is teleport from world to world, plane to plane. I promise you I don't know how to do that either. But even as he said it, shouted it, Teo Virata began to suspect that just maybe he did. I think maybe the first time it's like an accident, or no, I mean, not on purpose, like an involuntary flight thing, like to save your life, maybe. Was your life in danger, maybe? She waited. He stared at her wide-eyed. How'd you know that? Oh, yeah, no, I didn't, but I think those might be the rules. Like I said, I overhear things. Plus, I'm very intuitive, and you were really covered in sand. Buried alive, maybe? He nodded dumbly, or at any rate, he felt dumb. So, I'm not on Gobokon? Ravnica. Ravnica. The words sounded strange in his mouth. The grains of sand he had coughed up had felt more at home on his tongue. And you couldn't know anyone here, right? Just you, I suppose. She smiled and gave his arm a squeeze. Then I'm officially adopting you. Until you're ready to leave, you and I are family. Don't worry, I'll take good care of you. I'm great at that. I've had to learn to take care of myself, you know?
Uh-huh.
He felt numb. So let's think about what you need to know to live on Ravnica. She tapped her chin with her finger. He watched her for a moment with something like awe. He was grateful to this girl and not a little terrified of her. Or maybe not of her, but of what she might reveal. He tore his eyes away and began to look around. This world, this Ravnica, was clearly more than any place on Gobokon he'd seen or even heard of. They passed people wearing so many different types of clothing, garments made from polished leather and silks, and materials he could not identify. He stared up at buildings of stone and glass, and magic. Some with archways, foundations, and battlements, floating in midair. The city was huge and filled with corners and shadows. The smell of rain was heavy in the air. Though the sun was out currently, the streets still shone from a pre-dawn downpour that must have preceded his arrival by mere minutes. Okay, she said at last. Here's what you need to know. Ravnica is one big city, and a lot of folks live here. A whole lot. Mostly humans, I guess, like you and me. But plenty of elves and minotaurs and cyclops and centaurs and goblins and angels and Vidalkin and Viashino and giants and dragons and demons and, well, pretty much anything you can think of. Mistress Vraska's a gorgon. I've only ever seen three of those, but I think they're really, really beautiful, you know? I don't think I've ever seen a gorgon. They're striking. You can trust me on that. Anyway, I don't know who runs things on Gobokon.
Abbot Berez? Or, no, he just runs the monastery.
So, you're like a monk? I thought all monks had to shave their heads.
I'm not a monk yet. I'm an acolyte. And shaving your head's not a rule. At least, I don't think it is.
He threw up his hands. Right now, I'm not sure of anything.
Calm down. That's why I'm telling you stuff.
So, the abbot runs Gobokon, but here on Ravnica, it's the guilds. There are 10 guilds, and between them, they run everything. They had guilds in Oasis. That's a big town on Gobokon. They were coming to the end of the bridge, and he stopped before a courtyard that Oasis could have fit into nicely.
I suppose Oasis isn't that big.
But it's big enough to have guilds?
Yes, there's the Carpenter's Guild and the Stableman's Guild, but I don't think they run anything. I think they just get together to drink ale and complain. At least, that was my impression. I was only in Oasis for a few days. Well, our guilds are kind of a bigger deal. Although I'm sure they drink ale and complain as much as they do anything. I know my father drinks ale and complains a lot, and he's an important warrior in the Gruul clans.
So, you're in this Gruul guild?
I told you already I'm gateless. That means I haven't committed to any guild yet. Gruul, Rakdos, Selesnya. They're all kind of wooing me. I'm in high demand.
She laughed. He didn't get the joke.
I'm kidding, she said. I'm not in high demand.
All right, if you say so.
You're sweet.
I am?
I think so. I like you already. I'm glad I adopted you.
He laughed, though he wasn't exactly sure what he was laughing at. Maybe it was just a release. I think I'm glad of that, too. Suddenly shy, she smiled and looked away.
Stop it,
she murmured, more to herself than him. He took a deep breath and asked, What else do I need to know?
Let's see. The guilds are always fighting with each other. It seems idiotic to me. It feels like they should all be able to get along since they're all so different. What they care about barely overlaps. But they think being different means they need to pick at each other and stuff. So, if things start to get out of control, the conflict's supposed to be resolved by this guy named Mr. Jace Beleren. He's called the Living Guild Pact, which means whatever he says goes. You know, magically. Problem is, he's been missing for months and months. I think he's like you, traveling from world to world. Only on purpose, maybe. Anyway, with him gone, things have gotten iffy, you know? The guilds all tried to get together to stop some kind of evil dragon who's supposed to be on his way. But Mistress Vraska, she's the Golgari guildmaster, assassinated Mistress Isperia, the Azorius guildmaster.
Wait, she killed her?
Uh-huh. And now the guilds all hate each other. Or, you know, don't trust each other anymore.
And the evil dragon?
I don't know. I guess he's still on his way.
They turned a corner and she stopped in her tracks. Teo followed her gaze to see a tall obelisk topped with a statue of a dragon. An evil dragon, if he had to guess.
Huh, Rat said. That's new.
7. Jace Beleren. With a flurry of crisscrossing blue lines, Jace Beleren walked into his office, his sanctum, the chamber of the Guild Pact inside the embassy of the same. Immediately he felt a familiar harness wrap around his most basic and primal spark, the inherent magic within his being that made him a planeswalker. He was fairly confident he knew the cause, but the premise would have to be tested, and the test would have to wait. Ravnica is Bolas's trap, he reminded himself as he prepared for an immediate attack, creating an illusion of himself across the dark room and hiding his own form within a spell of invisibility. Nothing happened, except that Gideon and Ajani appeared in a shower of golden light, followed by Jaya arriving in flame. Teferi's blue whirlwind signaled his arrival, and Karn's was preceded by a clear, silvery tone. Looking around, a worried Gideon just had time to say,
Where's Chandra?
Before she appeared in a blaze of orange and red. Jace heard Gideon breathe an audible sigh of relief. The soldier didn't want to lose another comrade, and Jace couldn't blame him. Ajani turned to Jace's illusion and said,
Be on the alert. This is your base. He'd count on you coming here.
Jace's illusion nodded and raised a finger to its mouth, while the real Jace linked them all psychically. Linking Karn was a bit of a struggle. The golem's inorganic mind was so alien, but Jace managed. He broadcast his thoughts.
Proceed carefully and quietly. There's dust everywhere. Looks like no one's been here for weeks.
Chandra thought, Yeah, no way Lavinia would let anything gather dust. It smacks of disorder, and your deputy hates disorder. I wonder where she went.
I wonder if she's dead, Gideon thought grimly.
He frowned. Jace could tell Gideon hadn't meant to think that out loud.
Sorry. No matter how many times we do this, it still takes some getting used to.
They heard fast approaching footsteps, and without any thought, each assumed a fighting stance. Jace, in fact, assumed too. The doors opened, revealing Lavinia. Chandra thought, her ears must have been burning.
"I'm happy to see you, sir," Lavinia said sternly.
Dropping illusion, invisibility, and mind link, Jace said wryly, "I can tell. You nearly cracked a smile." Ignoring the jibe, the unflappable woman looked around the room until she found and addressed the true Jace.
"I was hoping the beacon would bring the Living Guild Pact home. I'm glad it did."
Jace started, "Ravnica is not my..." But he cut himself off. It was beside the point anyway. He said, "Lavinia, we have reason to believe the dragon Nicol Bolas is coming to conquer Ravnica. In fact, he may already be here."
Lavinia raised an eyebrow. "Oh, really?"
She walked to a window and threw open the shutters. They all approached. Jace had to suppress a gasp. In the center of the plaza stood a large pillar, an obelisk that hadn't been there before. Atop this column was a massive statue of Bolas himself. Beyond that, at the far end of the plaza, a huge stone pyramid had risen from nowhere. A citadel. Lavinia, the former arrester, cast a quick telescopic spell over the window's glass. Now they could all see that Bolas himself was sitting on a throne that hovered above the pyramid.
"I don't like him just sitting there," Jaya Ballard said. "It racks my nerves. What's he doing?"
Gideon unsheathed the soul-drinking black blade and stated, "He's waiting to die." He turned and marched toward the door. Ajani and Karn both stepped into his path.
"It cannot be that easy," Karn said.
Ajani's one good eye locked on Gideon as he reminded him,
"This is the trap."
Gideon hesitated, then nodded and sheathed the sword. Jace turned back to Lavinia.
"Bring us up to speed."
Lavinia's update was concise and coherent. Bolas had been working behind the scenes for months in an attempt to sabotage the guilds, or at any rate, the fragile truces among them.
"He tried to get to the Izzet League through Ral Zarek, who seems to have had a prior relationship with the dragon. Fortunately, Zarek defied Bolas and attempted to unite the 10 guilds to amend the guild pact. With you missing," she gestured to Jace, "the plan was to grant the Izzet's own dragon guildmaster, Niv-Mizzet, the requisite power to battle Bolas head-on."
"And?"
"It was a debacle. Bolas had already recruited the assassin Vraska, helping her to become guildmaster, queen of the Golgari Swarm. She murdered the Azorius guildmaster Isperia during the summit, setting every guild against the others."
Jace's face showed nothing, but he was internally furious with himself.
"This is all my fault."
He and Vraska had been allies. More than allies. And they had formed a plan. She had begun doing Bolas's dirty work before knowing who or what he truly was. When she learned the truth, she became just as determined as Jace to stop the dragon. But she'd still have to face Bolas, face his telepathic ability. So at her request, to offer her temporary protection, Jace had erased from her mind all knowledge of their alliance, of their feelings for each other, of Jace Beleren entirely. And he had erased all knowledge of Bolas's true nature. She was to return to Ravnica while Jace gathered up the gate watch and formed a plan. Then Jace would have come to Ravnica, located Vraska, and triggered her true memories. And together, they would have brought the dragon down. But gathering the gate watch had taken more time than he had anticipated, mostly due to Liliana, who had dragged most of them off to join her personal quest on Dominaria. But Jace was also late returning. He had planeswalked to Zendikar to track down Nyssa Rivaine, a founding member of the Gatewatch. It had taken weeks to find her and days to realize he could not convince her to rejoin the cause. In the interim, anything Vraska did in service to Bolas was not her fault.
"With the failure of the summit," Lavinia was saying, "Ral moved on to Plan B. Niv-Mizzet had ordered a beacon to be built. Ral activated it to draw planeswalkers here from across the multiverse. It seems to have worked.
It worked, Gideon said. But we were coming anyway. It's quite effective. It'll lure more than just the seven of us, Jace said darkly.
Lure?
Chandra asked, picking up on his tone. He ignored her and asked Lavinia, What else do we need to know?
Lavinia continued, giving the status of each guild one by one.
The Golgari Swarm.
Vraska herself has fled the plane, leaving various Golgari factions fighting for supremacy. We can't expect help from that quarter.
No sign of Vraska at all? Jace asked as neutrally as he could manage.
No, Lavinia stated, with a raised eyebrow that told Jace his attempt at neutrality had been less than successful.
The Simic Combine.
They departed the failed summit and have barricaded themselves within their territories, unwilling to parley.
The Selesnya Conclave.
Bolas had infiltrated Selesnya, but Ral helped the elven healer Emara Tandris dispatch the collaborators. But like Simic, Selesnya has withdrawn behind its borders. It is rumored that Selesnya's guildmaster, the Dryad Trostani, has gone silent, and Tandris doesn't dare make a move without her consent.
Jace flinched again. He had once had feelings for Emara, feelings she had not reciprocated. But she had been kind to him, and he hadn't protected her either. Emara, Liliana, Vraska. Caring for Jace Beleren is akin to a curse.
The Gruul Clans. The Cyclops Borborygmos had attended the summit over the objection of many of the other clan leaders. When it failed, he lost face and was deposed as guildmaster, replaced by a young fool named Domri Raid, who isn't quite fool enough to repeat his predecessor's mistake.
The Cult of Rakdos.
Hekara, the Rakdos emissary, was killed while fighting Vraska. Rakdos himself hasn't taken the loss well and has cut off all contact with us.
Jace noticed Lavinia's pause. She was leaving something out about this Hekara's death. But he knew Lavinia well enough to feel confident she wouldn't leave out anything that would matter in the long run, so he let it pass.
The Azorius Senate. After Isperia's death, Dovin Ban was...
Dovin Ban? Chandra exclaimed.
How did that son of a... He's not even from Ravnica. He's from my world. Well, he showed up here and made himself very popular very quickly by promoting the construction of thousands of his thopters, small mechanical spy devices that...
We know what they are, Ajani said. They were Ban's favorite tools on Kaladesh.
They were a good fit for the Azorius as well,
Lavinia said ruefully. Azorius was her guild, and Jace could tell it pained her to speak ill of it. But she was too pragmatic to sugarcoat things.
Ban's thopters were everywhere, watching everything, providing more intelligence of crime, of our enemies, of our friends. More knowledge gave the Senate more control over the city. Isperia was impressed. She respected Ban's abilities, and he rapidly ascended to become her grand arbiter and her replacement as guildmaster upon her death.
Guildmaster? But Ban can't be trusted! Chandra's outrage glowed red in her eyes. Flames danced around her hair.
Jaya crossed to Chandra and put a calming hand on her shoulder.
Child, she warned, watch your temper and your temperature.
Chandra nodded curtly, and her flames, if not her outrage, receded. Through gritted teeth, she said,
On Kaladesh, Ban was working with Tezzeret, who was working for Bolas.
Yes, that would have been helpful to know a few months ago, but we realized Ban's connection to the dragon too late. Having Vraska kill Isperia ended any hope of united guild opposition to Bolas, but it also served to elevate Ban to guildmaster. And he's solidly in Nicol Bolas's pocket.
But now that you know,
now that we know,
I myself am leading a rebel faction within Azorius to overthrow Bonn. Unfortunately, Azorius guild members are not exactly the rebellious type. Bonn is their legal guildmaster, and the Senate respects the law above all else. I've won a few to my side, but only a few. Gideon said,
Is it all bad news? Every guild you've named is either actively working for the dragon or has withdrawn, refusing to join the fight against him.
We have a few allies, Lavinia said and continued.
The Orzhov Syndicate.
Bolas hired the ghost assassin Kaya to eliminate the Obsidat Ghost Council, and she was successful down to the last ghost. The unexpected result was that Kaya became the Orzhov's new and unwilling guildmaster.
Karn said,
The new Orzhov guildmaster is dead?
Lavinia looked taken aback.
What? No.
You said she was a ghost assassin.
I meant she's an assassin who specializes in killing ghosts. She's not a ghost who's also an assassin. She's alive.
Karn frowned.
Then ghost assassin is a very imprecise term. So this Kaya is beholden to the dragon too? Teferi asked, trying to get things back on track.
No, that was clearly Bolas's intent, but Kaya refused to help him any further, and I believe she's a reliable ally, though I'm not sure how much support she has within her guild. She's been forgiving debts.
Oh, that must be going over well with the Orzhov bankers, Jace said sarcastically.
Pretty much as you'd expect.
House Dimir.
Bolas had infiltrated the spy guild as well, but its guildmaster, Lazav, seems to have cleaned house. Not that Lazav is all that trustworthy either. Still, he seems to regard the dragon as a serious threat and remains a probable ally.
The Izzet League.
Without the amendment to the Guild Pact, Niv-Mizzet was forced to fight Bolas under his own power.
I take it, Jace began.
The battle was brief, leaving only Niv's charred bones behind. Zarek is the new acting guildmaster, and one of the few still ready and willing to fight the dragon.
The Boros Legion.
Guildmaster Aurelia remains solidly on our side.
Of course she is, Gideon said with a satisfied smile.
Indeed, Lavinia said. But you just missed their first attempt to put Bolas down. Minutes after his citadel and statue appeared, they attacked with two squadrons. The dragon routed them easily, effortlessly, without budging from his throne. Aurelia has withdrawn the Legion to regroup. They're maintaining a wide perimeter around the plaza, keeping bystanders clear. But there are easily a few thousand civilians still within the boundary, and there's been no organized attempt to evacuate them.
Jace made a quick assessment.
So we have two guilds we can count on, Izzet and Boros. Two more, Dimir and Orzhov, that are likely allies. Four, Simic, Selesnya, Gruul, and Rakdos, who believe they can sit this battle out.
The fools,
Ajani said. Well, there's plenty of foolishness to go around. Bonn has placed Azorius staunchly on Bolas's side, and...
He trailed off.
The Golgari, Lavinia said, raising that single eyebrow yet again. Jace cleared his throat.
Yes, the Golgari. In disarray with no leadership. Unless Vraska returns.
If she does, Lavinia said, she'll have 9 other guilds after her head. Especially the Azorius for the murder of Asperia. And especially Izzet. Zarek trusted her, befriended her. He's not likely to forgive her betrayal.
Jace nodded slowly and then turned to Gideon.
Try to planeswalk, he said.
What? I'm not going anywhere.
I'm confident of that. But try anyway.
Gideon shot him a suspicious look. Then he rolled his eyes and vanished with a flash of golden light. He hadn't been gone 2 seconds when he reappeared, shouting, perhaps in pain, perhaps in frustration. It wasn't clear.
A golden circle within a triangle, the crest of Azor shimmered briefly above his head, before fading away.
"What just happened?" Chandra asked.
Recovering quickly, Gideon said, "I was on Kaladesh, at your mother's place. But I couldn't hold the plane. I was pulled back, yanked back. I tried to fight it. Not sure why. I wanted to come back, but it felt unnatural, so I fought the pull with everything I had. Didn't help. It's what I assumed would happen."
Jace crossed to a bookshelf, pulled off a title, and flipped through its pages.
"Here," he said, reading to himself. "I think I can show you."
He approached a wall of windows that looked out over the city to the east. The rest followed. He held out his hand and rotated it 30 degrees while whispering a single word.
"Display."
A few miles away, above the Azorius Guildhall in New Prague, a gargantuan and intricate version of the circle within the triangle symbol appeared in the sky. Jace heard multiple gasps, but didn't bother trying to decipher who was the most shocked. He said,
"It's the Immortal Sun, a powerful talisman created by Azor himself, originally to trap Bolas. Clearly, Ban has activated it for the dragon. Its power will keep all of us from planeswalking away, while Zarek's beacon will draw more and more planeswalkers here."
"And that's Bolas's trap," Ajani said.
"Exactly," Jace said. "There's no escape for any of us now, as long as the sun is active."
"Which means," Gideon stated simply, "as long as Nicol Bolas lives."
8. Gideon Jura. Gideon had stopped pretending he gave a damn about plans.
"Strategist, tactician, that was never me. A general? No. I'm a foot soldier, a sergeant at best, a fighter, a brawler, and maybe, I suppose, a weapons master."
There was a dragon that needed slaying, an elder dragon, and Gideon had acquired a weapon, Blackblade, that had once slain another elder dragon.
"Get close and stab."
These days, that sounded like Gideon's kind of plan. On the other hand, his attempt to slay Bolas on Amon-Ket, admittedly with the wrong weapon, had proven that get close and stab was easier said than done. Bolas had quite literally bounced Gideon around like a rubber ball. Gideon's magical invulnerability had protected him, but he never got close enough to any of Bolas's vital organs to make stabbing a viable solution. So Gideon was fine with the current compromise. A small unit. Jace, Teferi, Lavinia, and Gideon. Jace was already using his power of illusion to make all four invisible. He'd initially insisted it was only a scouting mission. But Jace didn't need to be telepathic to know that if Gideon got his shot, he would take it. So when they got close, Teferi would, at the crucial moment, use his control of time to slow the clock around the dragon, allowing Jace to use his power over Ravnica's magical law as its living guild pact to literally arrest Bolas in place so that Gideon could bring Blackblade to bear. Lavinia, a fine warrior in her own right and the only native Ravnican in their little group, would have their backs in case one of Bolas's endless series of minions attempted to rescue his or her master. Lavinia had announced, in a low voice that almost gave Gideon chills, that she was hoping said minion would be Tezzeret. She seemed to have a score to settle with that one. Again, a simple plan.
"Direct, clean, no nonsense. Or not much nonsense, anyway."
Chandra had objected.
"Come on, Gids, you can't leave me behind."
Gideon had sympathized, but Jaya Ballard had pointed out to her protege that neither pyromancer could generate enough heat and flame to harm an elder dragon. Fire was the first magic Bolas had learned, probably when he was still an egg. He literally inhaled and exhaled the stuff. Jaya and Chandra wouldn't be helpful, and the fewer people Jace had to mask, the better. Which was also why Ajani and Karn had stayed behind, or part of the reason.
Deep down, Gideon hadn't needed to catch Beleren's subtle nod to them to know they remained in Jace's sanctum as a failsafe. Ajani, Karn, Jaya, and Chandra could rally whatever planeswalkers were summoned by this beacon thing to take Bolas down in the event that Gideon and company fell. Gideon wasn't actually afraid of dying. His invulnerability made that unlikely, and frankly, he hadn't feared death since he was a kid on the plain of Theros. Kithian Iora, the name he'd been born with before foreign pronunciation had altered it to Gideon Jura, owed the multiverse a debt. If today was the day that debt came due, so be it. But damn if he wasn't going to take the dragon along for the ride. 10th District Plaza was nearly empty. Those who hadn't fled when Bolas's citadel and statue had risen were mostly staying inside. But there were a handful of hardy or foolish souls who still scurried about for reasons of their own. The four invisible warriors raced past 5 or 6 humans, 2 goblin children, and a blue-skinned Vedalkin. They were about halfway across the plaza when they paused for just a moment to look up at the towering obelisk upon which Bolas had set his own image. Gideon had to stifle the urge to attempt to push the thing over. He didn't have the strength for it, and it would have warned Bolas. Still, he'd have almost been willing to risk the latter if the former had been within his power. Jace, keeping even telepathic communication to an absolute minimum, waved them forward. They started up again, passing 3 more children, a human, an elf, and another goblin.
"What's with all the children in the plaza? Don't they have anyone who cares enough to get them out of harm's way?"
Of course, Kithian hadn't had anyone at their age. No adults, anyway. Just his irregulars, the oldest of whom wasn't much older than he had been before. Anyway, from what he knew of his companions, most of them hadn't had anyone to take care of them either for much of their childhoods. Maybe it was a planeswalker thing.
But there had to be responsible parents and guardians on some damn plane, didn't there?
Again, he had to fight off the temptation to do something noble, heroic, and idiotic. To stop, turn around, and whisk the kids off the plaza. Instead, he kept moving. In the long run, the little ones would be safer if Gideon dispatched the dragon quicker.
So no stopping. No turning around.
And just then, he stopped and turned around. A loud sonic boom and a rush of dry desert air from behind them nearly knocked Gideon and the others off their feet. The four turned as one as the sound of crashing masonry echoed across the plaza. To their mutual horror, a gigantic portal, 50 yards tall, had opened behind them, instantly decimating the embassy of the Guild Pact, shearing it nearly in half. Soft violet light poured forth from the portal, looking almost serene, in stark contrast with the destruction that the tear in space had caused and was causing. Gideon watched in horror as an ogre stumbled forward before collapsing, her entire upper right quadrant evaporated by the portal's arrival. Too far away to help, Gideon saw the embassy's crumbling facade fall, crushing 2 more bystanders beneath its formerly polished stone. This was the planar bridge that Tezzeret had stolen for Bolas from Kaladesh. With it, the two of them could transport inorganic matter from one plane to another. Jace had warned them that this would be part of Bolas's plans, but Gideon hadn't realized the bridge would be this large, this devastating.
And worse, I left Chandra behind. She and the others are still inside the embassy.
9. Dak Faden. Amid a puff of purple smoke, Dak Faden planeswalked to Ravnica, empty-handed and annoyed. And 4 feet above the ground.
"Gods be damned," he said aloud as he dropped in a heap.
This had happened to him more times than he cared to count. He didn't know many other planeswalkers, but none he had met would admit to materializing in midair and falling like an idiot. Of course, he didn't admit to it either, so maybe it happened to them all.
Yet somehow I doubt it,
he thought as he picked himself up off the cobblestone alleyway, rubbing his now sore ass. Dak hadn't planned on coming back so soon. Ravnica might currently be the closest thing he had to a home, but he had spent considerable time and energy casing a number of valuable treasures on the plain of Innistrad, and leaving without even one was professionally embarrassing for the man who had once declared himself the greatest thief in the multiverse. But here he was, back on Ravnica, with no amulet of the Kralmar, no Sealand Stone, no bloodletter, no praying gargoyle, no tome of eons, and no grimoire of the dead. Nothing to use his psychometry upon, stealing its spell of creation. And nothing defense to Jadash down in the lower sixth. Dak had borrowed expense money from the Orzhov Pontiff, a.k.a. the self-proclaimed greatest fence in the multiverse, a few weeks before Jadash had died. The Innistrad score would have squared Dak with Jadash's ghost, but now, interest on the loan would continue to pile up.
I hate owing money to the dead. They are so impatient.
It was no longer about the coin to Jadash. After all, what use did she have for it now? It's the principle of the thing, the Pontiff's spirit had said just before Dak left for Innistrad. But Faden knew Jadash really meant the principle and the interest.
So why did I come back?
The truth was, he hadn't been able to help himself. A combination of dread and anticipation, not to mention a light show that no one else on the streets of the high city of Thraben seemed to see, had called him to Ravnica. It made no sense, beyond the obvious cause. Magic. Magic of some kind. Magic powerful enough to summon a planeswalker, and powerful enough to spark Dak Faden's curiosity. Well, he'd better get to the bottom of it all, and the sooner the better. After all, the treasures of Innistrad weren't going to steal themselves. Dak adapted a tactile spell he'd once acquired off the amulet of Tarantul and quickly scaled the wall of the alley. He pulled himself up onto the roof of the nearest building to get his bearings, but he still wasn't high enough to see anything that might provide a clue as to what was going on. Lithely, he made his way from rooftop to rooftop, running, jumping, climbing when necessary. This part he enjoyed.
This is freedom.
The only thing that would have made it better was if it had been night and not morning. A cool night with only a sliver of moon. That was a thief's time. Simply being out in daylight left him feeling exposed. Last thing he needed was to be picked up by a Boros patrol or an Azorius arrester. Of course, for once, he wasn't carrying any stolen goods. Frankly, he wasn't carrying much of anything. Not much left of Jadash's loan, even. Broke and bereft as he currently was, he could actually risk being out in the sun. In fact, when he ultimately did see a patrol of Boros Sky Knights, and then another and another, Dak Faden, Master Thief, grinned up at them and waved. He was heading northeast, toward the center of the city, figuring if there was something to be seen or some bit of intel to be learned, he'd find it there. He wasn't wrong. Minutes later, Dak leapt across an urban canyon, his hands sticking to the side of a sandstone wall. It was a little slick from a pre-dawn rain, and his tactile spell didn't hold perfectly. But he managed to spider his way up to a high rooftop overlooking 10th District Plaza. From this height, he immediately saw three things that shouldn't be there. Three things that definitely were not there when he left Ravnica a month ago. A huge pyramid-shaped citadel, a looming column with a statue of a dragon atop it, and a gods-be-damned hole into another world. 10. Chandra Nalar. Chandra didn't know what hit her. With a groan, she raised herself onto her hands and knees, pushing up off the floor of Jace's library. A floor that was now sloping at a 45-degree angle. Through clouds of dust and a soft purple haze, she tried to clear her head and comprehend what had happened. The whole room was aslant. No, not the whole room, because a good third of said room was simply gone. Only a foot away from her right shoulder, what had been floor and ceiling and shelf after shelf of books and half of a long wooden conference table around which the gate watch once met, were now nothing but a curve of violet light.
The planar bridge! It's open!
Its activation had wiped out a chunk of the building, collapsing and tipping what remained of the embassy toward the gaping portal. Chandra looked down. Part of an old leather-bound volume rested on the floor against her hand, looking as if a very precise monster had taken a perfectly curved bite out of the tome's corner. She picked up her hand, and the book slid down across the slanting hardwood floor, falling off into an indigo void.
If I had been standing a foot to my right, or if Nyssa had been here. Chandra! Chandra, are you there?
It was Jaya's voice, calling from Jace's office, which moments ago Chandra had left in a snit because Gideon and Jace hadn't let her go with his squad.
Yeah,
she answered thickly, and too quietly to be heard. She heaved herself up onto her feet, cleared her throat, and called out,
I'm here! I'm okay! Then get in here and help!
She stumbled uphill toward the door, managing to grasp the knob and pull herself up the final distance. She turned the handle, and when the door swung open toward her, she nearly lost her balance, nearly let go of the doorknob, which would have resulted in her sliding down across the smooth floor and off its edge into what? She wasn't exactly sure. But she held on, even managed to grab hold of the door jamb and pull herself up into the other room. She pulled and latched the door behind her so nothing else could fall out into whatever oblivion lay beyond the Ravnica side of the bridge's giant circular portal. Jace's sanctum was even more dust-filled than the library had been. Calling out, I'm here! She squinted and looked about till she spotted Jaya's flame. She leaned in and carefully trudged up to the elder pyromancer, who was using precision flames to burn through a fallen oak beam that had pinned a fallen Ajani Goldmane to the smooth hardwood floor. Ajani was bleeding from a cut above his one good eye, but his own magic was rapidly healing the wound beneath a semi-transparent white glow.
Should I help? Chandra asked. Can you help?
Jaya responded, a little crossly, Chandra thought.
Without setting what remains of the place ablaze?
Chandra bristled slightly, but instantly realized this was not the moment to take offense. After silently patting herself on the back over this little bit of maturity, she asked,
Where's Karn?
Here,
the golem called out through the haze, while pushing Jace's large cedar desk off one silver leg. From somewhere, Jace's mind reached out urgently to hers.
Chandra, are you all right?
Her thoughts raced back to him, spilling out in a loud psychic jumble.
I'm fine. We're fine. What about you? Is Gideon okay? Lavinia? Teferi? Jace, it was the planar bridge that Tezzeret stole. It opened up inside your library, or inside the building, or through the building. I could only make out a part of its curve, but the portal must be massive, bigger than the embassy. It could easily have swallowed us whole. We're lucky to-
Chandra, slow down. Clear your thoughts. I need you to focus. I don't want to leave this psychic link open for too long or let it create too much telepathic noise. We're fine. We were halfway across the plaza when the bridge opened. But it's a true disaster. There are people dying out here. Do you need help? Can the four of you make your way out on your own?
I think so. I mean, no, we don't need help, and yes, we can make it out.
Then I'll shut off the link for now. I don't want it to alert Bolas to our presence. He knows we're coming, but he doesn't necessarily know we're here. Not yet, anyway. And in any case, I don't want him to be able to pinpoint our locations. Take care. The link went dead. Jace's mind was silenced within hers. Usually she disliked his mental intrusions, any mental intrusions, but right now the loss of his voice felt like an absence, another void. She instantly missed him. And Chandra wondered whether his precautions weren't pointless. She found it hard to believe the planar bridge had opened where it had at random. By now she knew enough of Bolas to know everything he did was done with purpose. Or two purposes. Or 12.
Still,
Jace is right. We don't need to advertise. If there's even a chance the dragon doesn't know where we are, we'll need to exploit it for all it's worth. We'll get him. We'll get Bolas yet.
11. Nicol Bolas.
If these ants weren't so insulting, I'd almost find them amusing. Did Nalar, Beleren, and the rest of their little friends actually believe they could hide themselves from Nicol Bolas?
No, the dragon had felt every individual arrival the moment each had landed on Ravnica. How could they not imagine that Bolas was tracking every move the mighty Gatewatch made? Truly, these so-called heroes were even more naive than he had thought. Beleren, Jura, Teferi, and the Azorius woman Lavinia were all in the plaza below him, under the preposterous impression that a little spell of invisibility could hide them from the mind of an elder dragon. Even his weak brother Ugin would have noticed their presence. And they thought Bolas could be fooled? And their allies? Goldmane, Nalar, Ballard, and Karn were inside the embassy. It was, Bolas had to admit, a minor miracle that they had all survived the opening of the bridge's portal. But that would be the last miracle any of them would see today. Vess, of course, was in position, ready to do her master's bidding in order to save her own mystically tattooed skin. Another minion, Ban, guarded the immortal sun. Bolas let his mind range wider. What other planeswalkers were on Ravnica? There was a boy he didn't recognize, newly sparked with the scent of Gobakan upon him. He was close by, as was the thief, Faden. The dragon's former stooges, Kaya and Zarek, were en route after separate attempts to consolidate their power within their two guilds, which each now led by default. Neither had met with tremendous success, as both owed their accessions to Bolas. When they abandoned his service, the dragon in turn abandoned them. And without his support, they had little hope of consolidating a meat pie, let alone a guild. Likewise, Guildmaster Raid was sitting by a bonfire in the Gruul crater, trying to lock in his own feeble power base. Bolas could still help him if he chose, and he considered it. He had arranged for Raid's rise, too, but there was no point. Bolas had no use for Raid now.
No use but one.
At the other end of the city, Tamio and Kiora had arrived mere minutes ago and were now seeking to join up with Goldmane. Narset and Samut had each come separately in response to the beacon. And just this second, another planeswalker had arrived in Rakdos territory.
Who? Ah, yes. Ab Nixilis. He, at least, is mildly interesting. Well, maybe interesting isn't quite the right word. Slightly less dull, perhaps?
And more were coming. More would come. Bolas knew all their names. He knew all their abilities, their strengths and weaknesses, the cracks in all their armors. Bolas had made it his business to know. Before the day was over, a few hundred planeswalkers would answer the call of Niv-Mizzet's beacon. The invention had been that infant dragon's fail-safe plan. If all else failed, Zarek would activate the beacon, summoning the planeswalkers, who would arrive to save the day. Since all else did fail, since Bolas had reduced Mizzet to a pile of bones, the beacon was indeed activated. And not a single pathetic excuse for a sentient being had noticed that Bolas himself had planted the idea for the beacon in what passed for Niv-Mizzet's fire mind. Bolas couldn't help but smile.
The planeswalkers are coming. Oh, maybe not all of them, but enough. Enough.
They'd follow the beacon in and be trapped on Ravnica by the immortal sun, leaving them at the mercy of the dragon's machinations. His plans proceeded like clockwork. Tezzeret was on Amon-Ket and had already activated the first knell of that doomsday clock by opening the bridge. Bolas realized he was gloating, and wondered for a moment whether such an emotion was beneath him. But it was difficult to engage in any real self-reproach. So far, his enemies had managed to engender literally no surprises for the Elder Dragon. None. The only thing that even verged on surprise was how little the Gatewatch had prepared for this day. After the way he had brutalized them on Amonkhet, he had assumed they'd have come up with some kind of plan to face him now.
Something. It would certainly have been pathetic and hopeless, but at least it would have been a strategy.
But ants don't strategize. They simply follow their instincts, endlessly repeating the same actions, trodding the same course over and over and over again, no matter the results.
Oh, yes. This time the ants might march a few feet to the left instead of to the right. But they still march, even if they march towards certain doom. They simply never learn.
Bolas was actually a little embarrassed for them. The only Ravnican planeswalker Bolas couldn't locate right at that moment was Vraska. His mind scoured the city world, leaving him confident she was no longer on the plane. She must have fled to another. That wasn't a surprise either, but it was a small disappointment. He had very much wanted to punish her for her stray moments of rebellion. But he'd catch up with her eventually. He'd catch up with every single planeswalker in the multiverse eventually, whether they came to Ravnica today or not. After all, there was time. He was an immortal. Once, he had even been a god. And soon, very soon, Nicol Bolas would be a god again. 12. Jace Beleren. Enough was enough. Jace was, after all, the living guild pact. It's not like he had wanted that power. In fact, he generally resented the responsibilities that came with it. There had been an ancient sphinx, a puzzle, a maze, a bailiff, and a gift that generally felt more like a curse. It was all so complicated, but it added up to this. The magics that bound Ravnica through its 10 ruling guilds and the ley lines of power that ran beneath the city had found their primary locus in the person of Jace Beleren. The magical muscle that came with being the living guild pact was indeed mighty. What Jace declared as law came instantly into being. He had to be careful, or at least selective. He couldn't abuse the process. Like a judge, he had to interpret the actual written guild pact in making his pronouncements. He couldn't simply wish anything into being, or non-being for that matter. He'd tested that a couple of times on insignificant matters. Wished for a slice of glazed Trilgic cake and the like. No cake had appeared, of course, because there was nothing in the law that said an individual was entitled to a free dessert simply because he, she, or they happened to be in the mood. But on much more weighty matters, Jace had wielded tremendous mystic authority by following either the letter or the spirit of the law, or both. That's why he had hesitated up to this point. If it had been within his scope, he gladly would have banished Nicol Bolas from this plane, or wished him dead. But there was nothing in the Guild Pact that made the dragon's appearance on Ravnica illegal. Even the creation of the pyramid and the statue were debatable offenses, as 10th District Plaza was neutral territory. If Jace had tried to command them away or used them as an excuse to attack Bolas, it might have worked. But given Bolas's own considerable power, it might have failed. And Jace would have shown his hand and the limits of it. When the four of them had left the embassy, the plan had been simple enough. Use Jace's own mental powers of illusion and Teferi's control over time to get them close enough to Bolas so that Jace could issue a magical arrest warrant on charges as simple as disturbing the peace. Jace would interpret that warrant as a spell of temporary paralysis, and then Gideon would use Blackblade to kill the dragon. Under the law, Gideon would have to be punished for this crime, but Jace could use a mercy clause in the Guild Pact to minimize that punishment to nearly nothing. Community service.
picking up trash maybe. Gideon might even enjoy that. But the planar bridge changed everything. The portal had killed people and demolished the embassy of the Guild Pact. Any attempt to interfere with the Guild Pact was punishable in any number of ways, including death, and any demonstrably devastating threat to Ravnica was clearly within Jace Beleren's legal purview. Now he felt certain he could use the Guild Pact's power. Close that bridge and end the threat Bolas presented by ending Bolas once and for all. Jace, Gideon, Teferi, and Lavinia were still invisible to all other eyes. Gideon had started back toward the embassy, but Jace grabbed his shoulder and reached out with his mind.
"They're all right," Jace whispered telepathically over the link. "I checked. They're all alive, unhurt, and making their way out."
"That's good. But there are bystanders over there, hurting and still in danger. We need to help," Gideon stated.
"And we will. But give me 2 minutes to act as the living Guild Pact, and I can stop all this. Once the dragon's dead and the portal's closed, helping will be considerably easier."
Jace could see that Gideon was still chomping at the bit to jump into action, but even Mr. Great Big Hero could see the wisdom of what Jace was saying.
2 minutes, Gideon thought at him.
Or less.
Jace exchanged glances with Lavinia and Teferi. Lavinia nodded once. It might not seem like much to anyone else, but Jace knew that for her, it was the equivalent of a rousing speech, and it heartened him. Truthfully, Lavinia had always gruffly believed in Jace's potential as the Living Guild Pact more than Jace himself ever had. Teferi shrugged a little and offered,
"Good luck."
Jace steeled himself, gathering up Ravnica's magic. Something felt different. Something felt disconnected. Something felt wrong. Or maybe that was just his own insecurity, his own doubts. This was no time for that. With one last touch upon Lavinia's mind and its firm resolve, Jace Beleren summoned the full power of the Living Guild Pact. "The dragon Nicol Bolas has murdered Ravnican citizens and interfered with the Guild Pact by destroying its embassy. As Living Guild Pact, this is my decree. Close that portal. Execute Bolas." Nothing happened. "Close that portal." Nothing. "Execute the dragon, Nicol Bolas." Nothing. Jace searched for the Guild Pact's power. He reached down deep into himself. He reached out wide across Ravnica. Nothing. Nothing.
"What's wrong?" Gideon asked with a touch of impatience that made Jace want to punch him.
"I don't know."
But Jace thought that maybe he did. He realized that maybe he'd spent the last few minutes talking himself into believing something he already knew wouldn't work.
"I've lost it. I've lost the power."
"Jace."
"Damn it, Gideon. I'm no longer the Living Guild Pact."
"How?"
Lavinia thought, "The alliance among the 10 guilds has always been tenuous at best. When Vraska killed Isperia and we were all betrayed, the result was catastrophic. The allegiances among the guilds were totally shattered. Perhaps the Guild Pact itself was extinguished."
"Then reignite the damn thing," Gideon commanded.
"If only it were that simple," Jace thought to himself.
And then, grimly, over the link,
"It's not about the guilds. They've never trusted each other, which was the whole point of the pact. No, it's the ley lines.
The ley lines of Ravnica converged on the embassy of the Guild Pact. That's why it was built there. And that's why Bolas had the planar bridge open there, so that the ley lines would be disrupted. It did the job. The Guild Pact and the magic it commands have dissolved. Perhaps permanently."
"And your word is law thing?"
"Gone. Over. Done.
One more weapon in our arsenal lost." Somewhere in the back of his mind, Jace Beleren could hear the dragon laugh. 13. Gideon Jura. Gideon growled and took off,
racing toward the portal to save whomever he could from the disaster. Teferi shouted over Jace's telepathic link.
Nine hells!